Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros with the Conscious Resistance Network, and today I want to dive deeper into a topic that I have realized is becoming increasingly important in the COVID-1984 era. Specifically, I want to talk about this idea of creating a parallel or alternative society or our parallel or alternative systems. I think many people have seen some videos going viral in the last year talking about parallel societies, parallel structures. And I, for one, have been really grateful to see this happening because this has been an extremely important part of my work for years. And today, I want to give you a little bit of a background for those who might not know much about this idea of creating a parallel society, parallel structures. And we're going to dive even deeper to some other political work that I've found that I think can be informative on this topic. And hopefully, those of you out there who've been thinking about this, how are we going to get away from all the COVID insanity? How am I going to keep feeding my family? How am I going to keep making money if these systems try to force jabs on me or tests or whatever? The idea that I've been promoting for a decade now is to create and build alternative systems. Instead of waiting for the government to fix itself or to try to vote people out or even to violently overthrow them, the idea is to build better systems, alternative systems that can compete directly with the tyrannical systems we're dealing with now. So today's video is going to focus on that. But before we get started, I'd like to remind you guys to bookmark theconsciousresistance.com. This is the home for all of our content where we've been producing content for 10 years now. And we recently upgraded the website to the Conscious Resistance 3.0. If you want to take a look at it, it's much more easier to navigate to find our 10 years worth of documentaries, investigations, books, to learn more about the topic of today's video, agorism, as well as my presentations and so much more. So I invite you guys to visit theconsciousresistance.com and bookmark it and sign up for our newsletter if you have not yet. So the first video I want to look at here is something I put out in March 2015, way back then. Who is Samuel Konkin III and what is agorism? Now, I have talked about this topic at length, but again, I recognize that in the last 2 years, there have been a lot more people coming to find my work because of COVID-19. And some of you might not be, I doubt many of you are going back and watching videos from 2015, especially because after being deleted off YouTube, we do still have some broken YouTube links. But we're gonna first talk about what is agorism, and I'll reference another video I put together about vertical and horizontal agorism. Of course, all of this will be in the show notes, and I highly encourage you to go read these articles. Most of this stuff about agorism is coming from my book, Manifesto of the Free Humans, which is part 3 of the Conscious Resistance Trilogy, as well as my most recent book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. So I'll be providing links on that. But let's start with that. What is agorism? Again, who is Samuel Konkin? What is agorism? And then my essay, What is Agorism? A History of Agorist Theory and Practice, and Vertical and Horizontal Agorism. So first thing I'll say is you might hear people describe this as agorism or agorism, but ultimately, from what I've learned, the man who came up with this idea, who manifested this idea, Samuel Konkin III, who was an activist from Canada living in the U.S., very active in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. He died, unfortunately, in 2004, but he talked about this idea of the agora, which is the Greek word for the marketplace. When he started to look at the current systems back in the 60s and 70s that we are facing, again, he recognized that the answer wasn't violence, the answer wasn't apathy, and the answer wasn't voting either. Politics are immoral in his view and mine, but also a waste of time and not going to achieve real lasting change. So if you eliminate apathy, you eliminate politics, and you eliminate violence, most people would say, well, then there's nothing left to do, right? That's it. Well, Samuel Konkin was a really ingenious man for coming up with this idea of let's create a parallel system. Let's compete directly with the system, right? So he believed in the agora, this place where we could have free exchange of ideas and goods, consensual voluntary relationships, very much born out of the voluntarist libertarian school of thought from the Americas. And he didn't think, again, politics was the way to achieve that society or violence. And he started to think, how do we get to that agora, to this imagined place where the world can be better, where we can have free trade of ideas and exchanging? And the solution that he came up with is what he called counter-economics. And counter-economics simply means the idea that we can have economic exchange, trading value outside of the government's hands, outside of the state's hands. So a definition of counter-economics would simply be the study and practice of all economic activity that the state considers to be either illegal or illicit. So what this means is if the state says it's illegal for you to, let's say the state wants you to get a license to cut someone's hair. If you are a counter-economist or an agorist, you would say, I'm going to do it anyways. I don't need a license. If this person wants me to cut their hair and we agree on a price, well, then we're going to do it. And what you're doing is you're starving the state of taxes and of resources. And Samuel Konkin believed that if more and more people consciously did this, if we created a conscious agorist movement of people who recognized that there was strength in pulling their money and their time and their support away from the government and their corporate partners, then we would build a parallel economy, the counter economy. And so counter economics deals with the black and the gray markets. So what I just described is a gray market as far as dealing with people in the sense of not, you know, getting licenses, not getting permits. Technically, what you're doing is not illegal, but you're not, you know, paying the taxes and doing those things. That is an agorist action, a counter-economic action in the gray markets. Now, when we talk about black markets, sometimes people hear black markets and they think about the mafia or violence or crime and things of that sort. But because Samuel Konkin was a voluntarist, a libertarian, he also believed in the non-aggression principle. He believed in the right to self-defense, but he believed it is wrong to initiate force and violence against other people, as do I. And thus, counter-economics, whether black or gray markets, does not include violent activity, child porn, you know, harming people, killing people. That's what he called the red market. That's dangerous, violent market, right? So before we go further, I'll elaborate a little bit further on these ideas. What Samuel Konkin described as the white market is the mainstream economy. That's what probably most of you already live in. That's the taxed, traced, IRS has taken money out of your check type of economy that the normal average person is born into. That's what we're all told. That's how things are done. That's the white market. Then outside of that, you have the counter economy, and that includes the gray and the black markets. Again, things that they want you to get permits or license for, or things that they say are illegal, but you're not harming anyone. This would be, for example, in Texas, it's still illegal to sell or possess cannabis in many parts. You go over to Colorado and other places and it's totally legal, free, decriminalized, whatever. So somebody who chooses to sell or purchase cannabis is participating in the counter economy because it's an illegal act that the state would rather them not do, but they are choosing to voluntarily and consensually do so, and thus they are exchanging value outside of the state's hands. And so that's the black and the gray markets, and it's much more than just cannabis. It can be anything that you think the state says is illegal, and we'll talk more about that in a moment in relation to COVID. So you got the white market, the black market, the gray market, and again, the red market would be violent and illegal activity. Things that the state says are illegal, but also things that we recognize as free people are immoral. So that is what counter-economics is. And Samuel Konkin described this in the 60s and 70s. He wrote books, he produced a number of essays and newsletters. He was very active creating organizations, giving speeches and talks, and really trying to propagate the idea of counter-economics. What he believed was, over generations, as more and more people chose to opt out of the state's statist economies and taxation, and in general, that the state would continue to grow and become more and more oppressive, and that a natural response to that would be to encourage people to leave the mainstream economy to try to seek refuge in the counter-economy or in the agora. And I believe, again, this is what we're witnessing because of COVID-19. There are people who probably see themselves as normal, average, everyday people who would have never considered doing something quote-unquote illegal, like buying a vaccine passport or getting a negative PCR test so that they can still fly or work or visit families. But now those people are willing to do that because the state is becoming more aggressive. Because the state is saying, you can't work here without this test. You can't travel without this shot. You can't come into the bank. You can't go into the grocery store. And people are either going to starve, submit, or we're going to build alternative systems. And so this is why COVID-19 has been a very exciting time, I think, for many of us agorist counter-economists in the world, because we see finally the state has become so oppressive that people can't help but recognize the answer will not be found within the government, politics, or violence. The answer is outside of their systems. The answer is to build an alternative system. And that is what Samuel Konkin spent his life promoting and working on. And I have continued this work through my books, and I've actually written, I think, a little bit more in depth than Konkin did. He was studying the collapse of the Soviet Union. And if anybody's ever studied that, or even today in North Korea, you know that the black market, the gray market, played a huge role in collapsing the Soviet Union. At the end of the Soviet Union, we were at a point where even people who were high-ranking soldiers and generals were willing to take money in the black market on the side. People were going to buy goods in, you know, technically illegal marketplaces because they couldn't get them in the mainstream places without paying a higher premium. So that's what's going to happen. As things, as inflation kicks in and as the government becomes more oppressive, even their own soldiers will seek refuge in the counter-economy and in the agora. And again, Samuel Konkin believed that first it starts with people recognizing there's power in the agora. Hey, we need to wake up. We need to create an alternative system. Then we start to build it, and that's slow going. We have to figure out how do we take care of money? How do we build alternative healthcare systems, alternative education systems? How are we going to take care of our elderly? How are we going to continue to grow food without using these statist oppressive systems? And I believe that is really where we are at now. Konkin described a four-stage process of getting to the agora, and I think we have finally broken to stage two, early stage three, where people are beginning to create the alternative systems. That is what is necessary, and it's a very exciting and scary time. There are so many people losing their jobs right now, people who are uncertain of their futures, and I get it. It's very scary, but also, I would say, a very exciting time. So I want to encourage you to look at my, I'll put them in the links below. Who is Samuel Konkin? What is agorism? I don't want to repeat too much of what I say in those videos. I've already, I think, shared enough. But I will tell you a little bit more about vertical and horizontal agorism. And we'll put this image up on screen here. Vertical and horizontal agorism deals specifically with the idea that you can be in the black market and the gray market. Let's say that for you and your family, the idea of doing something illegal like getting a vaccine passport or a negative PCR test to continue to work is just too big of a risk. You're not willing to do that yet, right? That is what we would consider to be horizontal or extrovert. It's more bold, right? You're going to go from statism, slavery, you're trying to get to the agora, to freedom, and you want to do it as quick as possible. So that you're the kind of person that you start using alternative currencies, you start creating local freedom cells, you're creating community watch, you're creating and participating in local counter-economic markets where people are trading in crypto or precious metals or bartering or even just cash, but they're avoiding taxation. That's one path. That's the horizontal extroverted path. Now, some people might be saying, well, I'm willing to, you know, have the neighbor kid mow the lawn without paying taxes and getting a license or a permit, but that's about as big a risk as I'm willing to do. That's fine. If you take the vertical or introverted path towards freedom, from slavery towards freedom, there are still many things you can do. Things like supporting and creating alternative media, starve the mainstream corporate media. Peaceful parenting, taking care of your kids, taking care of the next generation so that we don't raise statist, obedient, authoritarian adults is huge for building a better world. Again, you can create or join community gardens, community backyard gardens, building one by creating local food independence. That's a big step because all of the mainstream food systems, the mainstream grocery stores, they benefit from statism, from corporate welfare, money from the government. And now many of them are starting to enforce masks and things of that sort. So there's benefits to having local food supply. So again, you can peaceful parents, create support alternative media, join community gardens, creating freedom cells, supporting peer-to-peer decentralized technology. These are all different steps you can take that don't necessarily have to be breaking the law. For some of us, we might want to be more bold. And I think eventually, the reality is, my friends, and I've been saying this for a couple years now, you will have to break the law at some point. If you can't see that the system is getting more and more oppressive around us, then I encourage you to open your eyes and open your ears because they are making it illegal just to be a free, beautiful person. And if you want to continue to be a free, beautiful person, then at some point, you are going to have to make a decision. Do I submit or do I opt out? Do I choose to break the law? And I also want to make one more point now before we move on to another subject about building parallel structures and parallel societies. It's important for us to deprogram ourselves. It's important to deprogram that part of your mind that tells you that if you're doing something that is quote unquote illegal, that you are doing something that is wrong or immoral. And that's not the case, my friends. The government has all kinds of just insane laws on the books that they believe are legal, that for one, go against their, you know, constitution, their holy constitution, but also I think most people would say are immoral. For example, the United States government and many governments around the world used to say it was legal to enslave human beings. You might be a moral person at the time and say this is wrong, but they still think it's legal, right? The U.S. government also says that it's legal under Section 1022 of the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, which passed under the Obama administration. They believe it's legal to indefinitely detain American citizens who are connected to or suspected of terrorism, extremism, etc. That means they could take you away, not give you a right to trial, jury, contact your family, etc., and just throw away the key. And in their eyes, that's perfectly legal. So we need to learn to distinguish between what is legal and what is moral. They are not always the same, and rarely are they the same. I encourage you not to listen to the government and to listen to your own morality, your own heart and mind. So I've covered a little bit about agorism and Samuel Konk. And again, all the show notes will list everything so you can go further. I highly, highly encourage you to go further and to check out our agorism section on the website, because I've been talking about this for years. And I actually included Samuel Konkin's final unfinished book at the end of my book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State, which has now been published in Spanish and French and soon German. So let's move on from agorism for a moment and talk about parallel polis. I'm going to show you guys this on screen. This is, again, something totally new to me, so we're going to be going through this together. What I'm showing on screen is an article from The New Yorker from February 2017, and it's about Vaclav Havel, his lessons on how to create a parallel polis. And I think this is really, really interesting. So I'm just going to read a little bit from this, and then we'll go through some of this man's ideas and how it perfectly dovetails with agorism and counter-economics, and essentially just to recognize that historically there have been more people than just Samuel Konkin talking about building a parallel society. And this is the message we need right now more than ever during COVID-1984. So let's read here. The recent political earthquakes have found us intellectually and emotionally underprepared, even helpless. None of our usual categories, left, right, liberal, conservative, progressive, reactionary, and perspectives, class, race, or gender, seem able to explain how a compulsive liar and serial groper became the world's most powerful man. Of course, they're talking about Trump, and I wouldn't disagree with that assessment right there. Turning away from his unintelligible disaster, many seek enlightenment and literary and philosophical texts from the past. Of course, 1984, The Origins of Totalitarianism, and It Can't Happen Here. But this author suggests, quote, it may be more rewarding, however, to turn to Vaclav Havel, a writer and thinker who intimately experienced totalitarianism of the Orwellian kind, who believed that it had already happened in America, and who also offered a way to resist it. So this gives a little bit of background. He's actually Czechoslovakian. That's where my family's from. Born in 1936, Havel came of age in Czechoslovakia, whose communist rulers repeatedly imprisoned, and continuously surveilled him while suppressing many of his writings. He was defiant right until 1989, when he helped, according to them, engineer the fall of the communist regime. He's come to be celebrated in the West as a dissident, a word commonly used to describe many in the communist countries. However, his major writings from the late 1970s onward took a mordant view of the self-righteous cold warrior from the West who sought to turn the dissident into a distant object of pity and admiration. In one of his most famous essays, Politics and Conscience, from 1984, he asserted that dissidents like him, with their, quote, flawed efforts for freedom, were engaged in a universally necessary endeavor. He insisted on a shared destiny with people in Western democracies. So he goes in a little bit further, but let's get into his idea here of creating a parallel polis. And again, this is being born out of this man's direct experience with living in communist dictatorships. And he actually ended up becoming president of his country because of his ideas. So let's read from this section. For Havel, the main question before him was equally relevant to all, whether we could succeed in placing morality above politics and responsibility above our desires, in making human community meaningful, in returning content to human speech, and reconstituting as the focus of all social action the autonomous, integral, and undignified human I. Havel saw the possibility of redemption in a politically active civil society. The power of the powerless, he argued, resides in their capacity to organize and resist, quote, the irrational momentum of anonymous, impersonal, and human power. So he's basically saying we need to reclaim the I. We need to reclaim the power of the individual. And I can understand why somebody who suffered under communism would see the power of individuality, because things like communism and totalitarianism try to erase the individual. And I think what he's pointing at here is that people need to become empowered. They need to become self-aware. And then from there, we can start to create this parallel society. So let's continue. He says, active resistance is necessary because it is the moral and political indifference of demoralized, self-seeking citizens that normalizes despotic power. According to Havel, true escape from despotism requires living in truth, which means not only refusing all participation in the regime of untruth, but also rejecting all false refuge in the small pleasures of everyday life. He insisted that the individual be bound by something higher and capable of sacrificing something, in extreme cases, even everything, of his prosperous private life. He was contemptuous of professional political parties, which he criticized for releasing, quote, the citizen from all forms of concrete and personal responsibility. I agree with that. The idea that citizens of a nation don't have to do anything and don't have to actually strive for creating freedom because the politicians, the political parties are going to take care of it is a huge flaw in our systems. And I think it's a purposeful flaw. The people give away their power, they disempower themselves because they think by voting every 2 to 4 years is going to change things and that somebody else is going to speak for them and represent them. Obviously, we know this is not realistic. So it says he's contemptuous of professional political parties. He dreamed of a, quote, informed, non-bureaucratic, dynamic, and open communities that comprise the parallel polis. And this is what intrigued me, his idea of parallel polis. For him, his own community of dissidents offered hope for the future. He said it was, quote, a kind of rudimentary prefiguration, a symbolic model of those more meaningful post-democratic political structures that might become the foundation of a better society. So he also called for the rehabilitation of values like trust, openness, responsibility, solidarity, and love in politics. And he believed that a genuine, profound, and lasting change for the better will have to derive from human existence, from the fundamental reconstitution of people in the world, their relationships to themselves and each other. Now, the writer says this might sound a little bit new agey, vague, and impractical, but long before he formulated the power of the powerless, people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King showed that cooperative action of self-aware individuals can indeed be a formidable force. So I think this is really awesome. Here's another quote from him. He says, I cannot avoid the impression that many people in the West still understand little of what is actually at stake in our time. I think that's a really powerful quote as well. Now let's go on to another. Let's just check out the Parallel Polis Wikipedia page to get a few references. Obviously, be wary of Wikipedia, but they get you straight to the heart of it for this one. Parallel Polis is a socio-political concept created by Czech political thinker and dissident Václav Benda in connection with the informal civic initiative Charter 77. Benda and other philosophers sought to build a theoretical framework for social events in dissident circles, and they called this the alternative culture or the underground, and it was described in Parallel Polis in 1978 for the first time, which is pretty cool because this is around the exact same time that Samuel Konkin was writing about agorism and coming up with these ideas. And again, he used the collapse of the Soviet Union as an inspiration for this. I haven't seen any writings where Konkin references Parallel Polis or references this man in general, but it is pretty cool to see that around that time, this idea was emerging and more people were recognizing we have to create parallel systems. So it goes on to describe that Benda noticed the emergence of a new social structure in artistic and intellectual circles as a tool to escape the totalitarian communist regime, and detected the following pillars of the new field. So these are him describing kind of the new potentials for building an alternative system. And again, this goes perfectly with agorism and counter-economics. He said, constant monitoring and verification of civic rights and freedoms, which the state tends to restrict. Parallel polis consists of people who actively advocate for and protect their rights. So again, you can't just sit on the sidelines and trust the government's going to take care of you. You got to fight for your rights if they're going to exist. Otherwise, you're not really free. An alternative or underground culture that is independent and consists of art which is developed without permission or support of public authorities. I think that's huge. We have to have underground artists, musicians, creatives. That is a part of building the next stage of society and building a parallel system. We don't always necessarily know how those people are going to get paid or how they fit in, but the arts and that underground alternative culture is absolutely important, especially, as they said, when it is against what the authorities want. Now they talk about a parallel education in science, representing the right to free education and the development of scientific research. And this is, I think, because in many totalitarian regimes, governments do try to control what people have access to. If science doesn't favor their theories and their ideas, well, then they might just turn against the science. And again, this is perfectly in line with COVID-1984. Any science that the governments of the world do not like, that does not fit their narrative, they are rejecting. They're saying people who follow that are anti-science, we're quacks, whatever, COVIDiots. And that is, I think, pointing to the importance of us creating and sustaining and protecting alternative education and scientific institutions. He goes on, a parallel information system as an expression of the right to free dissemination of information. And they talk about publishing unofficial magazines and collections. This is, of course, the free and open internet, the alternative media, the independent media that we're trying to keep alive. That's a part of what we're building. And then the parallel economy. And this was really huge of what Konkin talked about, the counter economy, the informal economy. As I mentioned, there are There's scientific proof, empirical proof of the counter economy working, as Samuel Konkin talked about, in Peru, in Soviet Union collapse, and many other places. A parallel economy can exist, and in many cases, it's existing outside of the government's taxation systems, and it can become even bigger and stronger than the mainstream tax economy. So he wrote, political power considers this area as a critical resource for arbitrary control of citizens and strictly regulates it at this time. The economy of dissent was based on reciprocity and trust in the individual. It was the germ of a principle and the search for resources which are not dependent on the control of monetary tools. So again, trying to build alternative systems that are free. And then finally, we have the creation of parallel political structures and the promotion of their development. The alternative political structures must be incubated in the parallel polis and develop into a form which can replace the ruling authoritarian regime. Now, what I'll say about that and the difference between counter-economics and agorism is we're not trying to replace the current system. We're trying to compete directly with it and offer an alternative. In Samuel Konkin's visions and in his outline, what he describes is that as the counter-economy and the agora grows, more and more of our brothers and sisters who are getting jabbed and boosted and all that, they're going to recognize that we're living freely and they're going to want to exit from those systems. And you will start to have this mass exodus of people coming to join these, the alternative systems, coming to join the counter-economy, coming to join the next stage of humanity that we are creating. That's what agorism is about. So while he talked about building alternative parallel structures that can replace the ruling authoritarian regime, we don't want to replace it. We want to compete with it directly. And maybe through that you replace it anyways, but we don't necessarily, because agorists are anarchists, we're not trying to become the people in power. We're simply trying to help free the people by creating alternative systems. Now they say parallel foreign policy must be an instrument for the parallel society, for the international stabilization and grounding of the movement, and the search for financial and mental resources. Now I'm assuming by this they're talking about, like, if we could start to build, let's say that we had our own diplomats, right, as part of the parallel structures, and we decide that we want to start negotiating or reaching out to foreign governments or other activists to try to negotiate and say, hey, we're building parallel systems. The US government, the UK government, the Australian government, the French government, the Canadian government, the Mexican government, they are no longer in control. We're building something parallel. So if you want to develop relationships with us, I mean, that seems kind of like a big step, but it's really interesting. So before we wrap up, I do want to make a distinction here because I recognize that I've mentioned two Vaclavs and I just want to make sure I'm being accurate here. We have first Vaclav Havel, who is the first man I mentioned, who was the last president of Czechoslovakia and who undersaw the dissolution of Czechoslovakia and the breakup into Slovakia and Czech Republic. He was very much about this parallel polis idea, but he was actually inspired by the other Vaclav I mentioned, Vaclav Benda, who is a Czech Roman Catholic activist and intellectual. And he was the one who was part of this organization called Charter 77, which they first put out this idea of parallel polis. So Benda's ideas of parallel polis influenced the thought of other dissidents, including Vaclav Havel, who would go on to become the president of Czechoslovakia. Now, we can sit here and debate about the Czechoslovakian Revolution. I know that the Velvet Revolution, there might have been some outside foreign influence on that. But the point here, the reason I'm bringing this topic up is because I believe, and I've seen and I've witnessed, that so many people are asking about parallel structures, parallel society right now. I've just seen that term trending, and people who never before heard of agorism, never before heard of counter-economics, are now practicing it, whether they realize it. That's the other important distinction to make, is that you might hear these ideas about parallel polis, agorism, counter-economics, building a new society, and it sounds really overwhelming. You might be thinking, Derek, I'm still using bank accounts, I'm plugged into the system, I got a 401k, you know, I have all this debt, whatever the case may be, and that I understand. But the point is to start taking steps and getting free from this current system, which is absolutely going to enslave you to this COVID-1984 authoritarianism if you do not break free from it. Without a doubt, that is what's happening. Do not count on the courts to save you. Do not count on the lawsuits. Do not count on the government or the politicians to save you. You need to think about the long term, how you're going to take care of your family. And for me, agorism and counter-economics is all about generational change. I know that we can't overthrow these systems and build a new system tomorrow. We're not going to have a new alternative job market next week. We're not going to have complete, ready to go alternative healthcare systems in the next month, maybe not even the next year. But I can tell and I can feel and I'm seeing around the world through things like the Freedom Cell Network and other groups that people are organizing and we are building these parallel structures. I think this is the most important message right now for people to try to understand ideas like parallel polis, agorism, counter economics, simply opting out of the systems, what I call exit and build. Exit from these systems and build something better. That is the only long-term solution that I realistically see. Building better systems, educating the next generation of kids, helping them not become authoritarianism, taking them out of the education system so that their minds don't become mush and enslaved to these systems, unplugging our minds, our hearts, and our bodies from these systems, and focusing on building the next stage. The difference between what was happening in the 70s and the 80s and the early 90s in Czechoslovakia and during Konkin's time is that we have technology. And yes, I know there's a huge debate right now about the role technology should play in the liberty, freedom, truth movements. But for me, I believe knowing that technology is a tool, and like any tool, it can and will be used for good and for bad. I see the potential for us to take the best ideas of the past and to use the technology that we have while we have it to opt out of these systems and build better ones. That doesn't mean that we're abandoning nature in favor of technology. I tend to balance things out. I want to get closer to the earth and I want to use technology to help me create new economic systems, to organize better, to connect with other like minds around the world, to learn from each other through the technology of the internet and tools like this. That's my goal, to build better systems by creating alternative systems, by working with people and trying to manifest a better world in that way. I wanted to do this video for a while now because I see so many of you are searching parallel society, parallel structures. And again, I want you to know that there are realistic philosophies that exist behind this. If this is brand new to you guys, I really want you to go back, check out my essays on agorism and Samuel Konkin, vertical and horizontal agorism, agorist theory. Read my book, Manifesto of the Free Humans, if you want a bigger, deeper dive into it. Check out some of the articles that I'm going to include about parallel polis, and then start to really think, what are the areas of your life that you can start to break free from these systems? Is it the economy by investing in precious metals or cryptocurrency or trading and bartering or cash? Is it taking your kids out of the education system and then networking with other families and other freedom cells and pods and building alternative education means, community education, co-parenting? Is it by supporting on a monthly basis, funding alternative media or being the media yourself? Is it by using your technological knowledge to help people build job boards, open source job boards in their community so they can list and post when they're out of work and need work or when people are looking to hire? That's what I'm focused on. That's what my entire work, the Conscious Resistance, the Freedom Cell Network, the Greater Reset, that's what it's all about, guys. We're not here for politics. We're not here for violence. We're not here for silly debates. We're trying to build alternative systems, parallel structures, so that we can exit from these systems, build better ones, and lay the foundation for the coming seven generations of humanity. That's what I'm focused on, and I really hope you will join me on this journey. I hope this video has been informative for you guys. Please, once again, bookmark theconsciousresistance.com. Go give our website a look. We've upgraded everything. And if you want to support our efforts and what we're doing, I will be posting a link to a PO box that you can send me support if you want to support financially or if you've got equipment or just thank you notes, whatever it is. We are no longer taking support from PayPal, from Patreon, from Venmo, or any of those things, only through PO box or crypto. So if you feel inclined, check out the invest page on our website. And that's where we'll leave it for today, guys. Thank you so much. Remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.